Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. We are back!
Yeah!
What's up, gentlemen?
What's up?
I mean, I don't need to introduce us anymore, right? Like, we've been doing this for 337 episodes.
Legacy numbers.
No, if we do legacy number, it'd be more than that.
It's a roll call. Like, we're all here.
Oh, shit.
It's Full Voltron again.
Full Voltron, Ronnie, Travis, and Ferret Tim. Back at it again.
Back at it again. That's like almost the start of a rap, I think.
I'm sure it is. In Missouri.
Oh, here we go.
like
South Carolina is any better than Missouri.
Hey, listen. Yeah, you might be right. Anyways, see, this is why I don't read Southern Bastards, dude. I can't believe you read that. That's like an autobiography for you.
Yeah. It's like comics veritas.
You're goddamn right.
Southern Bastards is fun, man.
Is it? I wouldn't know.
Yeah, and it's same universe as Rednecks.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Interesting. Maybe I'll read it then, because I like Rednecks.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Maybe I'll watch Supernatural.
Listen, I made baby steps, okay? It's on my queue. Actually, wait, let me rephrase that. It's not on my queue because there's no more queues on Netflix. Netflix will remind me to watch it at some point.
Yeah.
So we have gathered here today, gentlemen, to discuss some fine Aftershock works. But first, we realized that Ronnie made a mistake. And there's a book that we never talked about.
Nope.
Ronnie,
I was all over it on the Twitter machine, but we didn't talk about it.
Listen, I appreciate you sharing your love of Aftershock on the social machines, but listen, this is a professional establishment thing we've got going on here, okay? Legacy podcast, the sole podcast relating to Aftershock in the entire world. How will the people know about these things if we do not discuss them?
I know. I failed the podcast.
Good.
I mean, I'm not going to make excuses. I got big shoulders. But I'm going to say this might be the first time I messed up, but it won't be the last time.
All right. You know what? I'm going to give you a gold star for admitting your mistake. You are a big man, and I appreciate it.
Dang. Did you just call me fat?
Anyway, so this book was announced, I think, like 3 weeks ago. And it is Patience, Conviction, Revenge, which is the oddest title I've ever seen in a comic book. Aside
PCR,
from
dude.
PCR?
What, right?
What? Yeah, that's what the initials are for it.
Oh, okay. Are you trying to make a reference to something?
I'm just planting a flag in the sand, dude. Like, that's what the kids are going to call it.
Ah, okay. And then it'll be replaced by PCV. Okay, got it. So... Or what's it now? Blu-ray. It'll be replaced by Poo-ray. Patience, Conviction, Revenge is a new Aftershock book coming out in September. And I don't know how we missed talking about this. It is a crime comedy written by Patrick Kindlin that we were trying to figure out what he did. Ronnie came through and figured out it's We Can Never Go Home, which came out over at Black Mask. And then I figured out he's doing Survival Fetish at Black Mask. Talk about not knowing who writes something, because I love that book. So, very surprised. But anyways, it is a crime comedy, and it is about a guy that used to be a mob boss, a crime genius, and he gets kicked out of it. And instead of using his money to retire and open up a Pilates studio, this is part of the solicit. I'm not making this up. This is not a joke. Okay? This is a serious podcast. It says here, instead of starting a Pilates studio, he dedicates himself to revenge. Years have passed, he's amassed an army of robots and is set to march on a glittering cyberpunk Las Vegas with the sole intention of crushing old friends under his boot. Cool. I don't know what any of that means, but I'm down.
Cyberpunk. That's cool.
Cyberpunk-ish. Yeah, sure. Why not? And the preview pictures look good. The images look really good.
Yep.
Does. Solid
art. So if he's a Black Mask creator, does that mean that every issue is going to be like a year late or... You think they've banked the issues before they're jumping into it?
Hey, buddy, this is not a Black Mask podcast. This is Aftershock Central, and all Aftershock books have came out on time, with the exception of one or two.
Two.
Shipwreck.
And Bloodluster.
Three.
Then. Rewind, edit, three, okay? Out of 20.
None of those were the publisher's fault.
Correct.
So there you go.
Sure.
Dang it, Travis. This is why you were demoted. Okay? You're supposed to agree with everything Ronnie and I say.
No, yeah. I can't do that.
No? Okay.
I wouldn't want to intern like that.
All right, fine. You're forgiven, Travis.
All right. Thank you. I'll screw it up somehow. don't worry.
I'm not promoting you yet. You got a yellow card. Yellow card. You get a red card. You're out of here.
The World All Cup's right. over.
The World Cup is never over.
It
is
my cup runneth over.
Oh, my God. Is that our segue to talk about Pestilence, a story of Satan number 3 written by Frank Thierry with art by Oleg Okunev?
That is. See how professional we are?
Wow. Amazing. Of course, we have colors by Rob Schwaggy P. Schwager and letters by Marshall Dillon with some backup colors by Mark Englert. See, look, Schwaggy P is getting busy, man. Now he's got a backup colorist happening here. Shaggy P, what's happening, bro? We thought you were man. Apparently.
He's busy lately.
He is. Well, isn't he doing something at Marvel too now, I think?
I don't know.
I thought he saw something like that. Anyways, that is our creative team. Cover, of course, by Tim Bradstreet. And all the covers are fantastic for this series and the previous one. Of course, this book is for mature readers only. And when we say that, we don't take it lightly. So as we discuss this book, be prepared for heavy sexual innuendo, discussion of pubic hair, etc., etc.
And if you're driving in your car with the windows down, now's the time to roll them up. Or if you're at work, it's time to put the headphones in.
If your kids are in the car with you, shame on you. You're a bad parent. All right. Let's get rolling with this book. We've got the Fiat Lux are back. Woo!
Yeah.
This is, yes?
Fiat Lux has been back, right? But it's in name only, right? Like,
well, the reason
Fiat Lux are like working for the Dirty Pope now and they're like a hit squad.
Well, but I'm talking about our ex Fiat Lux, Roderick and his gang.
The OG Fiat Lux.
Yeah, the true Fiat Lux.
Got it.
And they're back because even though we had them in the last issue, this issue is all about them, right? And in the first two, they were just kind of there in the background. Now they're like all in there. All up in that.
Hashtag as the all kids in. Say.
Yeah. Hashtag all up in that.
I like that they kind of start out in a way kind of like retracing steps from the last series. Like they're like, oh, we're going back to Westminster Abbey or whatever. And they're like, oh yeah, everybody and their mom knew that we were going to come here and like try to find something that would get us out of this mess, you know? Like, so it's a callback to the first series, but they're clearly doing something different.
Well, and so the funny thing is when I read this, I was like, you know, Frank Thierry, man, I know you listen to these things. Let me just say this thing publicly. It is very obvious that you don't give two Fs, and I love it. Because, you know, we had in issue two, we had the whole butt sex thing, right?
Yeah.
It really changed the tone for this book quite a bit, right? Because, like, there was some of that stuff. There was some nudity or whatever in the first series and the first issue of the second series. But it wasn't until that where, like, things really changed, right? And now this issue about, like, the first third of it is vagina jokes and your mom jokes and ramming it in jokes.
Yeah.
You know? And it's almost like, okay, now we're kind of in this comfortable place, right? Like, if you're reading the second volume, you probably know the story's about. And you probably enjoy Frank as a writer. So, props to you, sir. Because I love the decadence of your foul language in this issue.
Yeah.
It's really good, right? Because, like, there's a lot of profanity. But
yeah,
it's a lot of it's just told in jokes and wordplay. So, it works really well.
Right. Because, the two, James and the heavier set one.
Are you calling him Pat?
Yeah, because I guess, so it's okay. Because for some reason they got beef with each other or whatever. I don't know. I missed that part, I guess.
Yeah.
But he was like, the last time we were here, you're just slobbering all over your sack. And well, so then, and, you know, he's throwing out cunt and fuck left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roderick's wife is like, whoa, the child's here. Yeah. And then he pauses for a minute, but then like two panels later, you know, it all flies again. So it's like, it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh. Well, dude, it's like, you know, like the MPAA or whatever, you know, like you can have all kinds of people like getting grisly murdered all over like the entire movie. But you say fuck twice, that's an R movie.
Yep.
Yep.
Right? So yeah. Kind of there's something there.
Then Captain America pops up and says, language.
Yep, absolutely. That's the same with podcasting, by the way. You're allowed one F-bomb per episode. If you do more than that, you need to mark it as mature or explicit, whatever it is. Or you get kicked out of the iTunes store.
Sorry, I wasted ours then.
Dude, nobody listens to this. All right, Spectre. Yeah, a couple people. A couple thousand people. did you guys think it was weird, though, that they go back to the cathedral to find a new weapon?
Not really. I mean, that's where they found the Holy Grail at, so why not? What I found weird, though, was that they, between this time, they forgot how to open the secret chamber. And then Roderick's wife comes in, and she's like, hashtag duh. You just, it's the Bible. Just push the Bible. And then boom, they're off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't all of them that forgot. It's just the big guy that forgot. Because Roderick's in the background. He's like, remember, we enter to the word of God. And he's like, what does that mean? And the wife's like, God damn it, it's the Bible. Bam.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, we'll just go ahead and take the fun out of it because I don't get to kill things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. Of course.
I mean, I think that part might be like, A, to establish that, like, the wife, you know, is clever and, like, has something to contribute. Like, she can figure it out, too, you know? And as for the value of maybe why you go back there, maybe it's just so you address the question of, like, okay, well, we got another situation with these, like, zombie-type things. Why didn't they just go back to, like, the place where all the magic artifacts are? And it's like, oh, they're all gone, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's not lazy writing. Right, because, I mean, if it was lazy writing, they would have went here, got a holy rod or yeah, whatever, and then, you know, the story's over. But here, obviously, Frank takes that completely away.
So do they know that the Pope is now possessed by the devil? They don't know, right?
Possible. I mean, no. Like,
I don't think they know because they were at Roderick's hometown, like in the tavern. And the devil was talking through those zombies as right. Well, at the Vatican, the devil was in true form doing hashtag orgy with style.
Man, it's too bad we can't use it as an episode title. That'd be awesome.
So, yeah, I don't think they know. They know that the devil's in play because he showed them right. Or he showed revealed himself, but so.
Okay, I was just curious because if they knew, it seems like they wouldn't go here because they should assume that the Pope took all the relics away. Right, I mean, that's what I would do.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, okay, but it is Westminster Abbey, right, that they go to, or is it somewhere else?
Yeah, that's where they're sure. at.
Yeah.
That's where okay. they're at.
Okay, but at this time, I guess that's still under the purview of like the Catholic Church, like it's pre-Anglican Church, I guess.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Anglican Church wouldn't be till a couple hundred years after this,
like Henry VIII.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that plays out. The one thing I would say to the point earlier about do they know that like the devil's got the Pope is, I mean, A, you know, I think they already knew that the Pope was, you know, like. At least corrupt, you know, and potentially evil. But beyond that, like, they now have a mole inside, like, the Pope's inner circle that's been sending coded messages to people. So I think it is possible that the message that gets to Isabel maybe is like, okay, the Pope's been compromised for real. Like, you need to, you know, hit the road.
Sure, and that's probably why Isabel shows up at the Abbey, but she wasn't with the rest of them, right? Because she died in the first series.
Right.
So they wouldn't know until they meet up with Isabel.
Right. Sure.
But she might not even know because she got a secret message scroll that said that they were going there.
But if she knew that that was the message, she decoded the whole thing. So if there word about the Pope being converted to the devil, that would probably be in the message, right?
Yeah.
So that's my assumption. I don't know. Kind of weird that Isabel shows back up. They don't really explain how she came back. And to be honest, I don't really care how she came back. She's just back.
Yep.
Well, what happened to her in the last series? Did she get turned into a zombie, or did she get her head cut off, or what?
She got sucked under when they were on the boat. She, like, sacrificed herself so that way they can reach land.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So she died with honor.
That's right. And for anyone who doesn't remember, Isabel is the one that was a dude, or pretending to be a dude, and then everyone's like, dude, you're a woman? And she's like, yeah, but I'm a badass, and bam.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So, but yes, and then back at the Vatican, the Pope finds out about this guy that's been sending messages.
Thomas.
Mm-hmm. And poor Thomas, I mean, I thought, all right, this is the weird thing, right? So, it's explained here that Thomas works for the Knights Templar, so he's with the Fiat Lux, he wants to stop this whole thing. From the times that we saw Thomas before, I thought he was like a little boy, like an altar boy, right? Slash boy toy for the Pope.
Yeah.
But, after seeing this, maybe he's a little bit older. I don't know.
Well, his Roderick's son or whatever his name is, like he was just born in the last, series, and now he is,
10-ish.
So time has passed between the two series.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I see Thomas here as like 14-ish, 15.
Okay, that makes more sense.
He's got a giant ass back tattoo.
Yeah, he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want when you're sending somebody in on a on like a spy mission, right? It's like, we better get this guy tatted up first.
Well, so my thought was, if he's the Pope's boy toy, wouldn't he have seen the tattoo at some point?
Yeah, but he was actually the original good Pope's boy toy.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And then the Slytherin coward took over as Pope, and then, of course, the devil took over as Pope now. So the original good Pope wouldn't have mattered to him, because mm-hmm. the Knights Templar was working for them.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Now that makes sense. And of course he wants Thomas to give up the information, or he's going to cut his penis off. Literally, that's what he says. He's going to bleed him out from his penis. That's a pretty terrible way to die. Let me just say. I mean, I've never had my penis cut off, but my assumption would be it would be very painful, and bleeding out from it would be a pretty crappy way to die.
Yep, but instead he ends up like Bram from Game of Thrones and gets thrown out the window.
Yes, that's right. That's correct. In the meantime, we also learn about the real Fiat Lux, quote-unquote real Fiat Lux. And that whole thing was a little confusing to me, because I thought the Fiat Lux were working for the Knights Templar, but it seems like the group that we meet at the end really just worked for the, I don't know, they... Obviously, they work for the
Pope. Like mercenaries?
Yeah, they're more like mercenaries. Because you got like the pirate girl who was totally badass. And then the dudes with the long hair.
Marco and Dante.
Yeah, the Domenico brothers.
Yeah.
So
they're like Domenico's brother from the last series, right?
Right.
Correct.
So they're coming back for revenge.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
I think that's pretty cool.
Because in the last series, the OG Fiat Lux got branded as haters, basically, or bad guys.
Yeah.
And Domenico was like a traitor in the last series, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So
I wonder if they knew that, or if they, you know, if it just runs in the family and they're all bastards or what.
It's possible. So do we assume that the Fiat Lux are not working with the Knights Templar?
Yeah, I would assume that. Okay. I would assume that they're like Black Ops mercenary type.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. That was a little confusing to me a little bit, because there was reference to the Knights Templar at the Vatican, and then we cut to these new guys, and I'm like, wait a second, like, I thought the Knights wanted to overthrow the Pope, and now we have this here. These guys obviously are working for the Pope, so. Alright, cool. I get it now.
We talked it out.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate your service. Anything else we need to discuss about this book? Well, the Pope sending more zombies out into, I guess the ending, right? The Pope is
sending out the last page.
Yep, Pope is sending out his zombies all across European towns, and he reveals the true ending to this Black Plague, and it's to use human bodies as kind of a portal for demons to come out of hell and come into our world.
Yep.
In a very graphic last page, that's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Also very
gross.
Is
that the pubic hair that you mentioned earlier, or?
No. That was the beginning. This is definitely not pubic hair. There is some pubic hair, but there's definitely an arm coming out from there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, really cool. I like that. I like that. My son,
well, great.
Here's the thing. If all these people get killed because the demons are coming out of their bodies, why are they coming here?
What do you mean?
Well,
why
like,
are they coming here? I took it like aliens.
Hmm.
Like they're the host and kind of like giving birth, like C-section style, right? But you're giving birth to the demon. So like that's the body is a portal itself to get here, to take over the earth.
I got that, but if it takes the life of one person to bring one demon here, I mean, I'm assuming there's more demons than there are people in Europe. So like, why are they coming? Is there a purpose to them coming here is what I want
to
know.
Or is it just like,
let's just fucking go to Earth. Earth sounds awesome. Let's just go over there. F this hell place.
Well, I mean, it's the devil. So like, obviously this is what God created. So it's a big F you to God, right?
Okay.
And what's the better place to do it, but in the center of the religious world?
Sure.
I mean, that's right. How I took it, I guess.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully to that point, like they let the devil character explain to somebody what he, you know, what his goals are and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, let's rate this one up. I'll go first this time. I'll give us a 4 out of 5. Watch that little baby arm coming at your anus. Sorry, kids. This podcast not safe for work. I'm going to have to mark this explicit for sure.
Yeah. I'm going to go 4 out of 5 on this one, too. It's always great, and there's one-liners, but yet it has everything. So
yeah. Travis?
I think I will also go 4 out of 5, you know, split open like a C-word Tamos.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's pretty graphic, man.
Quit using all those bad letters, Travis. Jesus Christ, this is a family podcast. All right, cool. Who wants to pick the next book?
We've got two more. Travis.
You want to do Brothers Dracul next?
Brothers Dracul number 4, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Mirko Kolak. We've got colors by Maria Santeliola and letters by the most prolific man in comics, Simon Boland.
Yep. Where do you want to start?
I don't know. Travis picked it. You tell me, Travis.
Okay, so I guess, you know, we're looking at this thing that's unfolding, right? And, you know, we make a little bit of a leap in this issue where, like, they were kind of teasing a Vlad Ermine thing in previous issues. Now she's gone and Vlad freaks out and it sets into motion this thing, you know, and he's like, okay, I'm going to set up a graveyard for, you know, vampires to lure vampires in. You know, I'm not sure what his goal in doing that was per se. Like, it almost seems like maybe he's doing that so that vampires come, take more people away, and then he can track them back to wherever their lair is.
Hmm. Yeah.
Think there's anything to that?
Definitely. Yep. Yeah, yep. Definitely. Because that's what he does.
Yeah.
And the issue. And plus, it's a big F you to the people who are holding them slaves, too, because... at this point, all he cares about is his brother and her. So if people die here, it's not his country anyways.
True.
And so he can rage out on them and follow them back to find her.
Mm-hmm.
Word. Okay, so let me ask you this. What do you think about, like, why Ermine was taken? Like, do you think that it's possible that the devil or whoever is like the antagonist in this story, that they have plans for Vlad and like this is all part of their plans to kind of like turn him to their side for whatever reason?
So that was a thought that I had after we read the last issue, right? Because we had that guy pop up at the end of the first issue in that final panel, and he showed up. He's the one that kidnapped Ermine, and he shows up in this issue as well. So my assumption is there is some kind of plan to get Vlad to their side, maybe because he's killing so many vampires that maybe they feel if they convert him, then they'll be safe, right? And by having him on their side, they can continue to do what they're doing even better because he's such a prolific killer, I guess.
Yeah, see, I mean, I wonder if that's like a bad decision just because like he's already bloodthirsty and like maybe it's like they will come to regret it when he becomes the vampire and he's like, oh no, I just kill like with wild abandon, you know, and like you can't control me.
See, okay, here's crazy theory time. You ready? Because I see it differently. I see it as they're just doing it because that's what they do, the vampires, right? Mm-hmm. And they took her possibly because she's a virgin and pure, kind of what Esau was talking about or trying to BS Vlad about with
the
children.
Yeah, the innocence thing, yep.
Yeah. But with Vlad, he's got so much rage and killing that he's going to go after them. And then what happens at the end of this book really sets him off and over with. And so then he's just like, the hell with it. I'm going to take you guys over and be your leader now. Hmm. So then in retrospect, that's how we get Vlad being the king of the vampires. Mm-hmm. Just okay. A crazy theory. I mean, because I see what you guys are saying about them having like a secret agenda wanting to get him. But I think they're, I guess for lack of better words, like dumb animals, but they're not. Does that make sense? Like they're feral.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they don't really have a plan. Their plan is just to survive. And so that's how they do it. But then he's filled with so much rage and everything that now they took whatever and whatever. And then the only one true thing that he loves is her. And they took that away. So instead of wiping them all out, he's just going to make them his punk bitches, basically.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. How many more issues are on this? Two more?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we've got plenty of time to find out.
I think that I feel like they've established on some level that like kind of the feral, mindless vampires, I think they're connected to the like devil character. Like when he shows up, he's surrounded by the vampires, I think. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So I think it's plausible that maybe he might be pulling the strings to some degree or another. But yeah, like it's all up in the air, you know?
Yeah.
I was curious. One of the other things that I thought was interesting in this issue was like they show Radu writing a letter to his father and then giving it to Esil.
Yep.
And Esil seems to read it and then destroy it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you guys thought maybe might be in that letter.
I think it was just an innocent letter. Like he was writing home to his parents to let them know that they were okay. And I don't think this was like the first one or the first time that this has happened. It's just the first time that we got to see it happen.
True. Well, and it's also very obvious that Esil is very gay for Radu. And so maybe part of the reason for destroying the letter is that he doesn't want Radu to have a connection with his family because he wants Radu to himself.
Yep. Hashtag boy toy.
Dude, I was a little bit surprised by that part of the issue because my assumption up to this point was that it was just kind of a paternal thing that he was like, this dude's like the son that I'll never have and I'm trying to protect him, you know? Like I don't know that we've seen any kind of like blatant overtures that are like, yeah, you know, like here's some wine, come back to my tent and you know, like I'll teach you how to slay the vampire.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, up until this point, we hadn't seen any malice on his part.
Yeah.
Because before, he's always stuck up for them too.
Yep.
One thing I did notice, I don't know if you guys noticed it or not, but like for this time period, all the like spears and everything, and especially the push knife that Vlad has, is all like correct for this time period.
Hmm.
So,
well, I mean, I would assume Cullen does a lot of research on this stuff, right? So I'm not surprised at that.
Well, no, I like that because the push knife was like one of the main things, like sneaky weapons back then. Yeah. So whether Vlad was actually having it in case the vampires actually came to the town, or if he had other ulterior motives with it, we won't know since they did come.
Well, I mean, if the vampires hadn't come, my assumption is he would have killed Easel, right?
Yeah, right. But, I mean, it's just left out in the open now.
Yeah. What did you guys think about the whole interaction between Easel and Vlad when they do the innocence thing? I know you, Travis, you mentioned it already, but, you know, Easel's like, we send children because they're innocent, and, you know, the vampires are kind of, like, against that kind of thing. And Vlad's like, no, you do it because adults aren't stupid enough to fight vampires.
Well, the one thing that occurs to me is that, you know, we don't know who they are sending or have sent out besides the people that we're seeing now. And, like, worth noting that the Sultan's son is among them, you know, and, like, true, he's a child, but I don't think that what Vlad is saying about that he's too dumb to know or that he's expendable applies to his character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they establish that they've been sending kids out to die for similar quests for a long time with Mehmet, you know, and you know, they like these are the only ones that have survived like the first mission, you know, that would kind of play into that narrative a little bit more. But I thought that was the most interesting dialogue maybe of the whole issue.
Yeah, you know, since you brought that up, I wonder if that's not part of the reason why the vampires are, I guess, seemingly more violent, right? Because we assume that these things have been around for a long time, right? And the Sultan has been sending kids to fight them for a long time. But I wonder if it wasn't more like a sacrifice, an offering to the vampires to appease them. And now that Vlad and Radu and the Sultan's son, whatever his name is, are killing all these people, they don't have that sacrifice. And so they're becoming more violent as a result.
Yeah. So like the peace offering is broke, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And see, I took their conversation as Easel laying down the BS that Radu would eat up and be naive and believe.
Yeah.
But as where it's not Vlad, it is Vlad, so like all the F's have been thrown out the window. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, how he acts and reacts to it. Mm-hmm. But I think that Easel, as a manipulator, felt that he had to spill the BS to Vlad in case Radu and Vlad talked. Then it would be the same, you know, the same alibi.
Yeah,
basically.
I got you. Yeah, maybe. All right. Any final words on Brothers Dracul number 4?
Nope, we can rate it up.
All right, Travis, you go first.
I liked it. I'm going to go 4 out of 5. I think the next issue, I feel like my prediction is that Vlad's going to show up and like Devil Guy or whoever is going to be like, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You know, I think that's where it's going. And then like the last issue is going to be showdown between Radu and Vlad.
Nice. Okay. Ronnie?
I'm going to go 4 out of 5 on it because it's really ramping up to the final battle and the pacing's here and the art's awesome. So,
all right. I guess I'll reiterate 4 out of 5 as well. I mean, it's a solid book every issue, you know? So I'm looking forward to seeing what this, the ultimate showdown will be about and what's actually happening between the vampires and Vlad. All right, final issue of the night is A Walk Through Hell number 3, written by Garth Ennis. We've got art by Goran Suzuka, colors by Ives Corsina, and letters by Rob Steen. And Ronnie, I guess that means you're up.
Okay. With this issue, I liked the mind games that it played, but there's one minor thing throughout the whole issue that I didn't like. Well, I can't say I didn't like it. But I kind of had to reread at times. was like when it transitions from being in the warehouse to like a flashback scene.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it distinguished or separated it that good until you're like already in two or three panels deep into it.
Yeah.
But I mean, overall it didn't hurt really. But yeah, it's kind of cool that they're there inside and they're like, okay, we know that we don't have a pulse, which we think's bullshit. And obviously this guy, this agent's doing his thing, but we have free will still and we can think for ourselves. So we need to do that to try to get out of here.
Right.
As to where they're not like stuck in Groundhog Day.
So a question for you guys, at the end, we meet the serial killer that they've been talking about this whole time.
Carnahan.
Yes. Is that scene a flashback scene or is that a hallucination in this warehouse?
See, that's what I was referring to, like with the breaks, right?
Yeah.
But I think, like as the pace goes, that it's a flashback scene.
Yeah, so that was my assumption as well. And the reason I was confused is because you go from them talking to the accomplice, which is definitely a hallucination, directly into when they talk to, what was his name, Carnahan, in prison.
Carnahan.
When they talk to him in prison. So yeah, you're right. It's very disjointed. And I think, you know, a lot of times it's hard to follow a story that way when you play around with time a lot, like, you know, this book is doing. But I mean, like, Ronnie, that's one of the things we like about Deathstroke, for example, right? Cause Priest plays around with time quite a bit in that series as well.
Well, yes, that's true. But we also get narration boxes of when it transitions from said point in time to a flashback or both back.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's the whole thing of the story is where, you know, we're as the reader feeling what the agents are feeling and not sure what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
And the nature of the kind of overall premise may be that, like, it feels like it kind of ties into the view of hell that, like, you're kind of reliving your past on some level or whatever. So these things may not be narrative devices. They like you could almost assume maybe that they are reliving these memories or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will agree that the flashbacks are a little disorienting and putting the timeline of events together is confusing. You know, I think I have a handle on the progression of events if you want to kind of go through it for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that it starts out, like, earliest thing is that meeting where they're like, lady cops, like, I had a hunch, and based on this hunch I drew up a list of suspects and they're already turning up dead, so we're going to start investigating this. That leads them to the interview with dude who swallows his arm, who gives them Carnahan's name. They get Carnahan in, and we don't know necessarily what happens in that interview. They cut off in the middle. But after that interview, seems like Carnahan ends up dead. So they're, like, talking about why they're, like so confused. They're like, he couldn't possibly be here. He's dead. So it must be a copycat or, like, an apprentice or something.
Yeah.
Mixed in somewhere between those last two events, you kind of have something where the cops are like, we were going to do something, but we ended up not doing it. You know, they make reference kind of like cryptically to a plan that they didn't follow through with. So I don't know if they're going to pay that off as we go forward, figure out what they were going to do that they didn't.
So I have a crazy theory. So in the first issue, we had a flashback with the lady FBI agent where we assumed that maybe she was raped, possibly. Based on the stuff that I saw in this issue, what if Carnahan is not the serial killer, the serial pedophile? What if he is another one of these accomplices? And maybe his lawyer, Michael Schiff, is the actual killer.
Interesting.
Right? Because we know that all the accomplices kill themselves, right? and we know that we know that Cartahan died sometime after this interview. We can assume that it's not at the hands of the FBI because they wouldn't be working there, right?
Right.
They would have been fired or be suspended. And there's been no mention of that. But we do know based on her flashback, she was abused in some way. What if they try to go after this guy? She was kidnapped, and that's part of what they're reliving while they're at the warehouse. That's what we're getting all these flashbacks about what happened in the case beforehand.
Right.
Yeah, I like it.
And the reason why he's still alive.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. Just a thought.
I'm kind of, I guess, like, since we're talking about, like, who is the killer, the guy, whatever, the one they're searching for. Because they are very sure that it's one guy, you know, that they're like, this guy does this thing. Sometimes he grabs other pedophiles and brings them along and they wind up dead. But if they know it's the same guy, what other clues, what info do they have that really establishes that? And, you know, how can there be uncertainty about who it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And he just may be the smartest one out of all these accomplices, right? Because he definitely establishes himself as a smart guy in that last page. It almost reminded me of the interview when they catch Kevin Spacey in Seven.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's got, like, that same attitude about him.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, he's playing with the cops.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, I don't know. I do wonder, going back to my theory, because they're assuming here that they're maybe, like, unconscious. Because there's a mention of, like, an IV. Like, what if he's got, like, some chemicals in us and that are causing us to hallucinate or whatever. Maybe that's something that actually happened during the original investigation, right?
Right.
And maybe that's where they could be referencing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I like it.
Anything else on this one?
One thought for me is, do you think that there's going to be a payoff about the couple that they found? The one lady who died in childbirth and the other guy who died of ?
Yeah, like, I was curious about that, because I didn't see how it fit into what we've seen so far, right? That was like a new thread.
I mean, unless that is somebody, the guy is Goss or like one of the other cops or something, and somehow they don't know, and that's like his worst moment that he's got to live over, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, but you would have thought they would have known what he looked like, though, and recognized him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's like the mall scene in the first issue. It's like it doesn't fit with everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So far.
All right, Ronnie, you can rate this one up first.
I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5. I just didn't like the fluidity of the book, but I did enjoy it better than the first issue. But not as good as the second issue.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm going to disagree with you. I enjoy this one more than last issue, and I really like the last issue. I'm going to give it – what rating do I want to give it? I'm going to go a 3.75, because I'm very invested in the story, and I'm very interested in what the mystery is. And I think this issue really brings about some new and very interesting plot threads that I hope get explored before the series wraps up.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a little bit higher, like maybe around a 4.25, because I think it's, you know, very interesting. They're playing with a lot of stuff, and, you know, I'm on board with kind of, you know, leaving a lot of things vague, you know, with the caveat that they've got to wrap some of it up as the story progresses and concludes, you know. So, like, under the assumption that it all wraps up, like, I think it's interesting, and, you know, hopefully it keeps it up.
Cool. All right, so that's this week's books, and next week we have two new books. We've got Animosity number 15 and Dark Arc number 9.
Nice.
Yeah.
More Cullen.
More Cullen. There's a Cullen book every week. Every day of the year, there's a new Cullen book.
That's right. It seems like it. We got a double shot this week.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, not both of them weren't Aftershock, but, you know.
Sure. When's that other book coming out?
cold spots.
Yeah. That's in
late,
a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, yeah. In August.
Yeah, I thought so. All right, cool. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter. Ronnie's at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Great Magnet. Oh, I said it right this time. I'm at Geekvine. The show's at After
You got it right this time.
That's right. And that's it. We'll catch you next week.
Deuces.
Shock the world.